Okay, so it is time to start part of session one. We start off with Joanne, really adapting, who's going to be telling us about chromium and what's the next reactive super reference.
Okay. Thank you, David. First of all, I would like to thank the great for the invitation. I'm really glad that I'm going to talk about one of my favorite subjects and my favorite place here at the home. So, let's start with the toy model that is accepted for Superlora and regarding its multi-wave importance. So, you can see the four phases in life experiment, the free expansion, the zero failure, the radio, and final dissipation. And we start with gamma and supernova rounds. They meet in the X-rays, those two places. When you have the after shock, it's expanding the ISM, it gives the plasma behind the shock, temperatures more than 10 to the 6. You have thermal crystalline. You can also have a drug from synchrotron. And then when the SNR can hold, it's getting older. Temperature drops, the shock velocity drops as well. And this is the time when you're cooling reaches behind the shock are being formed. And this is the first time that the SNR starts migrating the optical. Radiant, you can see throughout the life remnants, okay, inside, outside, wherever. So, from this country, you can see that the extent to an SNR becomes an X-ray, radio, or optical source depends on its evolutionary state. Why do we perform multi-wave files? Of course, to avoid effects from non-market studies, okay. But the properties that can derive from studying SNRs are many. First of all, as we said, age, evolution. The way they interact with the ISM, selection effects, force, and progenitor properties. All this pathing cycle has details that are very poorly understood to us. But on the other hand, each one of these factors has a different signature in another wavelength. For example, as I said from the first slide, toy model, different evolutionary stages, different wavelengths. Multi-wavelet properties regarding environmental ISM. You can measure density, temperature, electromorphical, or chemistry spectra. Progenitor properties, of course. If you have mixture spectrum, you can see from the application data scenarios, you can see X type 1 or A or 2. And again, selection effects. For example, for optical diffuse or reduce, it's easier to detect an X-ray or a radio source than an optical SNR. So from this you can see that we need a multi-wavelength study. I would like to share a story with you, a short story. A few years ago, I attended a conference in India when I had just finished my PhD, and I was very clear that I was going to present my results. But a few talks before mine, I heard someone say, the presenter, who needs to deal with extra galactic SNRs? You're boring. And I was a bit upset, to be honest. Of course. Okay, you don't see the spectacular images that you see with galactic SNRs. Okay, you can probably not that fully examine the physics with visual ISM, so you can see the interaction with the ISM. But we have two major problems: absorption and distance uncertainties. Okay, most of the galactic SNRs are detecting the plane. Absorption, you cannot see the optical most of the times. While the distance uncertainties prevent you from evaluating crucial parameters, the size, luminosities. And even if we have quite a large sample of galactic SNRs, 94, okay, from this catalog, 2014, this is not a useful statistic tool to perform, to see, to probe the evolution of the SNRs, okay, and to perform systematic studies. On the other hand, you have the extragalactic SNRs, okay? You can avoid those two problems. You know the distance of the galaxy. You can minimize the absorption, especially if you select some galaxies. And you don't have one mass, one metallic one's population history. You have many variables to play with, and of course, with pure observations, you have larger samples. Although there are points, okay, you have limits in the sensitivity, but still we need a large sample in order to help us understand Western and DSM populations in different kinds of variables. Just a brief sort of overview. So, the first XRLR is an analog tech was the LMC, the Matheson theory, 1964. But the groundbreaking in detecting XRLR is an analog with the timing of the Matheson of 1973. We detected equivalence working with a handful of SNRs in the LMCs. And since then, most of the surveys that are conducted are based on optical data. Okay, up until the advent of Chandra, SMM, HST, Radio PLA, okay, now I can say that we have multiplied data, and even the last decades, the last 10 or 15 years, are doing the most smartphones on these populations. Now, the selection criteria. How do we detect SNRs? The main criteria is the optical. The self-replicate output ratio larger than 0.4. This is an empirical value, okay, coming from after 1973. And it has proven to well differentiate the short excited regions from the polarized regions. So, super remnants from extra regions of Lactam Nebulae. The short needs to be non thermal, the extreme single transmission, okay? And if people want to detect X-ray emitting SNRs, okay, they need to find soft and thermal sources. Although there is an issue with perfusion with fusion emission regions, we know that, but still. So, if we want to find X-ray emitting SNRs, what we do? We calculate the concentration, that means soft, medium, hard counts of the sources. We have thermal grids, we have power law grids, and the sources that lie within these nodes here, the thermal grid, and have temperatures below 2 kV. These sources are regarded as X-ray emitting SNRs, okay? And of course, we have this strong indicator, the iron 2 line, that is for supernova that really embedded in the dust. And starting out with the things that have been done in the optical. The major thing that we're working with are emission lines and emission line ratios, okay? All these emission lines are combined and they depend on various parameters, abundances, short velocities. It's not easy without short models to define them, okay? However, based on these models, we know that some ratios, like super 2 to alpha and 2 to alpha, are good candidates for something. For example, As I said before, super 2 to alpha is the main shot-killing gas indicator, as well as the N2 to alpha, and also the good metallicity indicator. Oxygen, since oxygen is formed closer to the short front, it's more sensitive to short emission rather than abundances, especially velocities less than 400 km per second. And then you have the electrodensity, the indicator of the ratio, the software. But if you want to actually have precise measurements, either with shock velocities or abundances, you need to use sophisticated shock models. The first thing I will focus on are the entry to alpha ratio. Okay. For example, we have about H alpha to N2, H alpha to N2. These regions here are coming from their diagnostic blocks and coming from a large sample of galactic SNRs, H2 regions, and Lactam Nebulae. So you can easily define the different the shock heated gas for the polarionized gas. Okay. And we have a bunch of galaxies. These are spiral galaxies, these are the regular galaxies, these one spiral galaxy, and these are from the world of quantum interesting, and this is the 97, just for comparison. And for example, what we did, we calculated the ratio, we plotted, we rested on the plot, and we say, first of all, All the sources lie within this range, which is the typical values for supernova remnants, 0.4 to 1, which is a good 2 to alpha ratio. It's low scale. Okay. The interesting thing that happens is along this axis, most of these sources are coming from regular galaxies, which means that something different in the ocean. This could be due to excitement or to the incident. But since N2 and S2 are good excitation indicators, and you cannot see a difference with S2, so that means this is not the case for N2. So it's suggested that metallicity is the thing, okay? And we did know that in regular galaxies we have no metallicity, transparency. The same patients, the researchers, but with a different formulation. Instead of beta alpha, 22, N2 is alpha, and sulfur is alpha. Okay. These are from the world's very long, 2497, M83, was from the Scout group. These are SNRs, these are SNRs, and those are H2 regions. Using this plot, we know, we see, okay, and we know that supernova regions preserve higher N2-3-alpha ratio than H2 regions. On the other hand, we see that the higher the N2-3-alpha ratio is, the higher the N2-3-alpha ratio is. So, that makes us believe that it's a very good secondary smoking gas indicator. Again, the same ratios, but I actually use this plot because of it has many, many galaxies. M33, 31, 81, and some sort of irregular galaxies. You see the same chart here, the higher, but what was interesting to me was this part here. Although you see most of the galaxies at M81, M82, M51 lying on this ratio here, here you have the irregulars, and here you have M33. They have higher sulfur-2-3-alpha ratios. And probably, I don't know, you see a very large slope, probably there's something with the ISM of M3. We know that the ISM of irregular galaxies is different than those from spirals. Okay, now, so, if someone wants to have precise measurements, short velocities, for example, this is the left-hand plot, okay, he or she needs to use the reference model. So this is a model, the reference models of Allen et al., 2008. You have different abundances, you have different magnetic field parameters, they are the vertical lines, and you have for different shock velocities. It starts from 200 km per second. It's going down to 1,000 km per second to the step of 50, if I remember correctly. So, we did the same thing, we calculated the ratios, we placed our sources on top of these grids, and we see that most of our sources lie on these grids. So, that means that most of our sources have higher than 200 km per second velocities. And there are about others that probably have 200, 250. Another example, if you want to measure abundances, this is the theoretical, the shock energy model by Dom et al., 1984, the work of Lee and for M81 and M82. They have different values for oxygen, they have different values for oxygen to the nitrogen abundance, and they were able to find a range within the oxygen abundance yes or not like. And of course, we have alternative methods for calculating abundance. For example, Allen et al. 2016. Another thing, we are very much interested in how SNRs evolve their age, but since that age is very difficult to be observed, to be calculated observationally, so we usually use size as a proxy. Okay, and this is what the cumulative size distribution do. They are in the form of power laws, as you can see, and we found that different slope and different evolutionary states. For example, alpha to be one, sorry for the alpha, to be one, that means that the source is in its pre expansion phase, 2.5, Sever Taylor phase, 3.5, it's radiating. So, M31, M33, DMCs, Milky Way, and M83 as well. If you pay close attention, you will see that both M31 and M33, the majority of the sources seem to be at the 7th layer phase, quite young. and says they seem to be at the fixed function phase. Yeah. The only sources that seem to be in the radiative phase are those in the selection effects, probably. And this is really also interesting because Doppler-Rabin has split regions, so you can see the nuclear SMR phase probably comes from the expansion phase, and these SMRs that more involved than the second Taylor phase. Another relation that we use directly, is the non-surface brackets diameter relation, circuit relation. It has been used before, but we just make the distance in a little way. And here again, two directions of the work of Blair Law, 1997. You can see the larger the diameter for the SMR is, the less the surface brightness. So that means the more involved, it gets fainter. Of course, you have density here for smaller diameter objects. It's hard to detect small diameter objects, depending on the telescope you're using. I would like to focus on these sources now, 1, 2, 3, and those 4, 5, I don't know. They seem to have quite large diameters, and it's not usually the case for SMR. They have diameters more than 100 parsec. And probably these sources are the misclassified as supernova regions. They're probably super bubbles. Super bubbles have become a very nuisance problem for us that we detect because, in a way, they contaminate our sample. Okay, so we need to have criteria to rule them out. So, apart from the large sizes I told before, they have large sizes, super bubbles. They have less flow rate of expansion velocities, less than 100 kilometers per second. They are encompassed by massive stars, the situation is faster, And their shock exciting structure can be with moderate separated phase operations. Of course, we have now ventilator, rather faint X-ray emission, and mainly thermal rather than non thermal emission for stars. As Brian said this morning, one of the interesting things that we are trying to discriminate are the progenitors. First of all, because of course we cannot always see the explosion of supernova, So we need to know the chemical evolution, the stellar evolution, even the galaxy evolution. So these are the criteria for many that are doing this kind of work to use in order to discern those populations. First of all, these things are objects. You know that if you have a bulk at first, this is easy. If you know that you have a spectrum, the Bachmann dominated spectrum, you know it's a type 1A. If you have spherics, you know it's type 2. That's it. End of the story. Again, if you have OB associations or not, OB associations favor type 2. Spherical or non spherical X ray morphology. Type 2 are regarded to be. Non-symmetric, and I presume that Laura will tell us more about it on Wednesday. Lower flux, atomic flux, for a type 1A, and of course, the signature from the spectrum, metallohalogen. If you have it, a source that's rich in A elements, for example, it's type 2, it was rich in iron, it's type 1A. Going back now, now that we know that we can discern based on the progenitors, I'm showing you again the cumulative size distribution again for M33 and M31. The black circles are the ones that you saw earlier. Most of the SMRs are in the second Taylor phase, but if you use a progenitor, you can see a distinct difference. First of all, and it's known, it is expected. You have a less number of type 1 rather than 2 rather than group collapse supernovae. And the other thing which is interesting is that the mean, as you can see here, this is the diameter in parsec. the mean value in diameter for type 1a is larger than those in type 2. So that means that we have a different ambient environment. Probably type 2 denser environment, probably they're moving faster than their type 1a. And the also the same thing that we see here, again, same modulation using progenitors. You can see again the trends, the higher the diameter, the less surface brightness. But if you pay attention just to type 1a, you see that probably, at this BNB, which is what they say, you see a stronger correlation. And probably this has to do with ISM as well. Now, going to mismatching properties. The properties that you have SNR, that they are detecting more than one wavelength. And people that were doing this kind of stuff with Venn diagrams, which actually detect the selection for the physical events that we need to handle. Each circle denotes each wavelength. For example, for the NDC 7793, the optical, and the 2011, they have found they have detected 26 sources just in the optical, zero that have optical and X-rays, zero that have optical and radio, and just one matching all three wavelengths. And again, you can see that the correlation between the optical radio or optical or X-rays is less. I should know now, I would like to say that most of the studies that have been conducted on the extra-galactic SNRs based on multi-wavelength approach, they actually focus on trying to find counterparts, X-ray radio counterparts, to already identify optical SNRs. So this is one of the cases that we are not missing sources here. So let's go to selection effects. First of all, okay, limit sensitivity. Distance. Some would expect the SNRs to be formed, for example, in spiral galaxies to have the same luminosity. Okay? But no, you see that the more distant you get, it's very well illustrated by this book, much of the person. The further the distance is, the brighter objects you get. Again, if you have no density or no diffusion emission regions, okay, it's harder to detect optically selected SNRs. It's easier if you use X-ray to radio. Selection effects. Another selection of physical effects is a small fraction though, but we're missing specific types of supernova remnants. For example, using the criteria of supernova operations to be greater than 0.4, automatically we lose the boundaries of many lines. The SNRs of the optical reach. On the other hand, regarding the X-rays, we need soft and thermal sources. We miss barriers, they have a hard spectrum. Okay? And again, evolutionary sake, it's easier to detect older and more bold supernova remnants in the optical. Now, let's see what have we done with the luminosity relations. It's known that the luminosity gauge in H alpha is proportional to the square of density, and radio is linear proportional to density. So some would expect a very strong correlation between those two luminosities. This is from the work NPL3, from the work of Romex out of 2010. This is mine, and this is different kind of galaxies. And none of them you see correlation. Of course, you see that the higher the LX is, the higher the X-ray is. But the X-ray luminosities are lower, they don't lie in the one-to-one relation. This is interesting. For example, when you interpret that in terms of not homogeneous ISM, while we think, more or less, that we have many and different materials in very many different temperatures. Luminosity in the X-rays against the 7.2-2-alpha ratio. Some would expect if you have a stronger shock, then you will have stronger, a higher and enhanced 7.2-2-alpha ratio. But again, this is not the case. On the opposite, on the contrary, you see the higher the LX is, the less it's able to trace our brains. So probably, based on those two cases, so probably we don't, the emission we get from X-rays comes from a region probably that is not the same than the region that is emitted in the optical. Another thing, another relation, X-ray luminosity against the good density indicator, the ratio of silver to silver lines. Some would expect, again, denser environments, you have a higher X-ray luminosities. And this seems to be the case here, in the case of 2023, not in 2010, at least for the higher LX objects. As you can see here, for example, those that lie below 1.2, which corresponds primarily to 250 cubic centimeter. So these sources that are in denser environments, they are always detected in the X-rays. So you can see it has a correlation here. And every other possible combination between luminosities, example, radio, radio LX, again, you don't see a very good trend. Okay? And probably this is because of the clumpy ISM around supernova remnants. So, what about the environmental effects? This is from the work I done in 2010. So, these were our galaxies. Okay, these are irregular, so it's a spiral, and quite a bunch of to complement, to expand our sample. Okay, we have three more spirals. So, we calculated the average anatomical X-ray luminosity, which is another perspective, against the entire luminosity of the whole galaxy. You don't expect to see a trend between those two axes because this is for the whole galaxy, this is for individual SNRs. But what is interesting is that those are more luminous than those. That means that something's happening to regular rather than spiral galaxies. And again, we can see that, okay, either it's due to particular lower luminosity than the chain regulars or to the non uniform ISM. SNR supernumeration rate. As I told you before, okay, the reflective supernova remnants. Most of this, the vast majority of the SNR will be reflected at the collapse rather than type 1A. And because core collapse are the endpoints of massive stars, some should regard that they are a good proxy of the current supernumeration rate. And yes, actually, we see this kind of trends, a number of automatically identified stars in these galaxies. This again are irregulars, this is irregular, irregular, spiral, and there are four or five spiral galaxies. Now there's about the sense here. We can have my, because my name has done this work, so very nice to work. So you can detect a large number of new supernova remnants. So please visit your poster and ask it, whatever you want. And you can actually see that it's quite tense. So, yeah, indeed, maybe we can use this NARS instead of IR, if not one, as opposed to something great. And my last slide, luminosity functions, especially in the X-rays. People are using luminosity functions in order to discern different populations. In our work at 2010, based on the sample that I mentioned earlier, we had six galaxies, five regulars and one spiral. We had evidence that the extra populations in regulars are different than the ones in spirals, but we have a rather small number of statistics. But here, with the work of Magnetal, it seems that this is the case. Okay, he made good work on the museum that has a very, very large sample. And as you can see, the different slope detected by the different slope detects the different population. So, this is SMC, this is LMC, and this is the spirals. So, it's very clear that something's going on. prepare those designs. But I'm sure that Mayor is going to tell us all we need to know on Thursday. So now, I really believe that we're living, I am living the revolution of the technical aspects of the life of the scenarios. It may be to be done with the context. And they have actually helped us to measure, to see some of the physical properties. But it's not enough, and it's just the beginning. So we need more samples, deeper samples, in many wavelengths, in order to be able to avoid some of the selection effects that giving us time. And finally, obtain a very, very complete series picture of these calculations. Thank you.
I want to point out two things. First, it's very difficult to infer the ocean stages from the slow reviews.
We have
to take into account the properties of the ice cream.
I agree.
We saw that in 2010. A lot of people had said that the LC renders were the clear time and safety. They're the same. They have different visibility times. Modeling that is very important. The other thing is, when you're trying to distinguish core blasts from the 1A's, and this is something, again, that we did back then, say, well, anything that has a progenitor that's less than 40 million years must be core blasts, or anything that has only a progenitor is probably 1A. That, again, is probably not true. We know now, binary populations in this models. Core collapse supernovas that include mass transfer. Can have core collapse supernovae exploding 50, 100, 200 million years after star formation.
Yeah, I agree, but as far as I'm concerned, with the extragalactic supernovas, this is a continual reusing. Yeah, of course, they're not enough. You need to provide more, or have something else in fact. It's totally agree.
So you mentioned about the sulfur to eta for ratios and sometimes not agreeing with the X-rays and stuff. I mean, I guess that's not unusual in the sense, right? Some of that, are they radiated from, for example? I mean, the densities are really high, and you may not be getting enough high temperatures against them, right? So, you know, those things are indicating radiated shocks where you just have very high densities.
You're talking about the initial energies, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I'm just wondering, is the sulfur to radiate up for radiated shocks? Do you know if they are radiated as compared to non-radiated? Maybe if the densities are too high, you're just getting. No temperatures, you don't get enough acceleration, and so this is coming from different regions. Have you tested for what the shock rate?
Well, actually, it's not my work, and I'm not. No, I haven't done it, and I'm not sure you have done it. I don't remember, to be honest. But I really am not sure that I cannot hear you very well, and I didn't understand
the question. No, you have also. Not before, I think, where you showed that they're not correlated or something.
Which ratio?
The supernormals of higher LX tend to have less S2 to each alpha ratio.
Which one?
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, I mean, but there might be a difference between the fact that you're looking at radiated from better non-radiated shocks in different places. And, you know, so some of the, and if you have radiated shocks for non-radiated shocks, you're not be getting enough sulfur to H alpha and stuff, whereas you know in the other case, if you have radiated shocks, you're not be getting enough X-rays or something. So if you actually could test what the indicator of non-radiated shocks are there.
Yeah, that's probably the case, but again, it's more or less the thing that I told you, that you have, probably you don't see the same region.
Yeah, but that's probably the same thing. Probably indicating more X-rays than you don't get X-rays.
Exactly, yeah.
Any questions here?
No.
Next one.
Well, you mentioned the fact that, that there is a good relation between the radio and the X-rays. Right?
The non-correlation, you mean? This one?
Okay. Not in the radio and the X-rays.
They're from the big diagrams. No.
No. Between the luminosity in the radio and the luminosity on the X-rays. Well, actually, if you combine the extra luminosity with the sky, this is what you should density.
With the size, based on what? On the visibility or the extra?
On the size that you should.
Okay.
And then, so we get the physical is the density of the antibodies. Then we have the much better correlation, something that we've been shown with the oral group in 2010, but it's something that has been shown many years ago by the prison, and that showing that, that if you take one physical quantity, like the density of the antibodies, then terms of the correlation with the radio is much better.
So I'd like to comment on what Carl said. First of all, as somebody who was around when those first number-diamond relationships were being constructed, I think people realized that it wasn't the reasons in the brief mention today. And I said so in a very nice paper by Jack and David Meltdown that were written at one point for discussing the site. I think the work that you have done showing this is proof is very nice, but I don't think that people were that confused. The question I want to ask, or the other thing I want to ask, is there's now become a tendency to associate quark labs, call things quark labs, simply on the basis that they are associated with Asian regions. A lot of those divisions that you showed are based on that. So it's clear that associate things with these two regions that probably the Prince region on average. But do you really believe that, that this is a good way to classify supplements, or should we be adopting some less interpretive statement? I mean, it's a nice shorthand, but it's really what we want.
From the email perspective, so you say that maybe the optical trigger is not that
no, it's not quick. Talking about
and overlaps.
Yeah, it's talking about the slides that might be done in the that separate objects on the basis that they're called.
Based on their morphology and their potential.
Yeah, but the basis is on the association of those two regions. Yeah. That is that, if you believe that is a good way to divide up really the planets and the labs, you should be using that as a terminal.
If we're talking about the UNB work, I wouldn't be that sure regarding morphology. I would be more based on the top labs, yes, like 1A. But I really don't. It doesn't say much, but it does actually.
Yes, so my question is actually how much do you agree with that split between one small type 1A?
I'm not sure about, for example, I'm not sure if I would expect this slope for both populations. I don't know if someone would expect only to be in the phase function, even if it's like 1A, if it's a focal lapse, if you're thinking. And that's my thing that you end up.
I think we need to move on, so I'm sorry, the question could